Are we recording yet?
Always.
Okay, well, in that case, I want to officially say that I'm now being followed by Chris Sims. And it
is awesome.
Awesome. That's a better start than the last DM roundtable, which started with me saying crap.
Yeah. We could stop recording and start again if you wanted to go back and just start with crap. But I would like to think that our little conversations had something to do with you getting your Chris Sims fame.
That's right. Oh, man. Although I think it'd be fun to have a nice – that'd be a nice catch for us to start all of our podcasts with an expletive. So, just right out there. Just right out there in the front. Perfectly clean the whole rest of the show, and then you start off with a great expletive right in the front. Crap.
I think we're trying to get away with – that one. Yeah, I think we're trying to get away with not having to put up the explicit content tag on iTunes.
Yeah, no, I understand. I'll play nice.
Yeah, oh, I have to watch my language.
Yeah, Tracy, sorry.
For this than we have for Geeks.
No, oh, no, 4Geeks gets down with swearing, and that apparently killed conversation. So.
I was just trying to remember how many times I've ever heard Tracy swear, and I don't have half fingers, so I can't really count them.
Mouth like a sailor, like a sailor. You just have to get her in the right
chat.
Yeah, you got to get her in the right mood, and you've got to get indignant. Tracy is what you got to get.
Oh yeah.
Oh, she goes
indignant.
Crazy.
Tracy's the best.
Yeah.
I explained to my coworkers your whole thing about indignant Tracy, and they're like, "Oh yeah, totally."
They're all in agreement with that. There you go.
So a friend of ours, newbie DM, started a little conversation today about how much he hated rituals, which got my dander all riled up, and he apparently thinks they suck, which I'm definitely going to have to disagree with. I agree that they could use a little tweaking to make them work a little more streamlined, but definitely not as bad as he made them out to be. Of course, I think he was just trying to bait me into an argument. So.
What was funny is somebody responded and they were like, "Hey, you guys, I like DM Samuel's house rule about the review about the rituals," and then I was like, "Yeah, that was based on Thaddeus C's house rule."
Yeah, I think he came back later and was just like, "Oh yeah, sorry, I didn't know that."
Well, I quoted it in my.
I know, and. No, some people Twitter. Some people read about halfway in, and they're like, "Oh, I got to respond to this," and they just start typing right away. So,
yeah, sometimes I do that, but I've learned to try to not until I've read the whole entirety of a conversation I'm coming into late. Doesn't always work.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll.
Go ahead.
Oh no! Let's actually go on to the topic, or else we could talk about Twitter for hours. Because I mean, Twitter is just amazing. So. No, I like rituals. I like the way they work, and I think that, you know, not allowing them to be an instant cast and using them more like a skill, you know, like streetwise or heal or something like that, versus just an at will or a standard action power, I think gives them a huge amount of role playability, but keeps them out of A, combat, and B, kind of keeps it from throwing the whole balance of the system off. Because anyone who had rituals, if you were able to use them as a standard action, you know, whoever's got rituals suddenly has a whole slew of powers that aren't accessible to everybody else.
Well, now see, this is where I disagreed with Thaddeus, and that's that, to me, if you're using something as a skill, that you're using it as a standard action, because most skills require a standard action. So to me, those are one and the same. So it's not... Yeah, and to me the difference is that rituals don't really have a lot of combat instant moment use. They're different than utility powers. They feel different. There's an overall aspect to them that's I don't know how to explain it. And you know, maybe I should be better at citing examples, but I just don't see, you know, there's to me if it's a power, it adds bonuses to combat. Either attack, damage, movement. Where most rituals affect the area or do something like that that change the environment somehow. You know, a good example is control weather. You know, that's not – so they're different. So to me, it's not adding a bunch of powers. I mean, and since anyone can cast rituals, as long as they have the feat, then you – it balances the playing field. So that's my two cents.
Well, I think
so,
for me, one of the problems with rituals – I mean, so there are two. One is that they're often very expensive. Now you can get around that by including ritual components as part of treasure parcels. But then the other thing is that it's a lot more work. It can be a lot more work for the DM to make sure that they get used within the game, because you have to set up instances where a ritual would actually be useful, because, as you said, most of them aren't really useful in combat itself. So since a lot of DMs have limited time planning, they spend most of their time, I think, planning a more overarching story or encounters, rather than trying to come up with, hey, you know, I know my guys have talk to nature, talk to trees. How will I incorporate this into my game?
I agree, but so one of the things that I've started doing, at least in my face-to-face game, it's a little more difficult in my online games, but in my face-to-face games, I talk to the group ahead of time, first of all, and tell them I really encourage ritual casting in my games, and I really encourage them to sort of seek out times and places when they could utilize rituals that they have. And then in the game, I try to encourage it as well. And that doesn't mean actively I say, okay, now would be a good time to use this ritual. I just sort of try to leave it open. And if they think something is important, even if it wasn't, like, in my mind, it wasn't necessarily important, if they think something is important and they say, well, can I use this ritual to find out more about that, you know, something, language or something, I encourage that and say, yes, absolutely you can. And then I try to make it so that that thing becomes at least worthwhile for them to use. And it's a little easier in a face-to-face game because I can have a conversation with them and say, you know, how do you feel about rituals and whatnot. Whereas with online, it's a little more strained. But yeah, it needs to be sort of – there have to be opportunities. Of course, they're useless if there's no opportunity. Nobody wants to spend time and money and resources on something they're not going to use.
Well, I think to some extent it boils down to two things. It's opportunity, and not only to use them, but to get new ones, to be able to buy them or buy them. The other problem being the time. I'm not sure I totally understand the time argument. I do for some of them, because some rituals in-game take like an hour. Though those are in the minority. But most of them, don't they take like, you know, 10 minutes or 30 minutes? And I don't see in a lot of cases why that is such a big problem, why that's such an immersion breaker for a lot of people, why they don't feel like they can take that 10 minutes to cast a ritual when 90% of the time they're probably going to be taking 5 minutes after nearly every fight, you know, as a short rest. So I think to some extent, to get people to use them more, you have to find that balance between what the game actually – what I think is a reasonable time that the game gives you and what the players actually want to. I don't think a standard action – I think a ritual should be more than one standard action. But I can also see the point argued that it shouldn't be 10 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever.
Right. And I think with the time thing too I feel like in a lot of 4th edition, people are hand-waving a lot of the time where you would be able to have an hour to cast a ritual. They just, rather than trying to describe what you're doing during that time period, they're just like, oh, well, you're in town for half a day, whatever. And then people who might be trying to cast a ritual or something and saying, well, I need to make sure we take an hour out of our day to do this, might feel a little like they're hurting the group by making that request and trying to play that part out. The other thing I would say is that my players, we've used rituals in our game. They always say, I'd like to use this ritual, but if it breaks your game, then I won't use it. They're always afraid they're going to break the puzzle or whatever I have set up for them with by using a ritual and somehow circumventing what I wanted. And I'm just like, dude, if you figure out how to break something, I don't really care. Then, you know, then you do that because that's what heroes do sometimes.
Those are
totally cool.
Those are some really polite players, because I have never had a player ask before they tried to break my game. So.
Yeah, there have been a few times where like they had to go underwater, and they're like, we could totally get the underwater breathing ritual, unless that'll break your game, Tracy, and then we won't do it. And I'm like, no, it's fine. I know that those rituals exist, but I also know you don't have them, and you don't have anywhere to buy them, so it's good.
Right, and that's the other thing. I mean, the DM does control the flow of what they're able to get. You know, cost has always been the big issue, I think, for a lot of people. Is like, oh, I have to pay to cast this spell. But it's if you don't pay for the skill, then it's basically, or to use the ritual, then it's basically like getting a free skill. You know, if you get to ask the Hand of Fate three questions, then you basically get three free streetwise history or, you know, whatever style questions you're asking it without having to pay any kind of price. So it's like instead of having a skill you can use, you can pay this money. You don't have a streetwise skill, so I will use my Arcana, which will gain me the benefit of basically getting me this information, which is great. You know, the other thing is about time. I think that people have maligned rituals because they don't look at other skills in the proper light. You look at a streetwise check, that's roaming the street, you know, listening to people's conversations, asking people questions, trying to get a feel for the area where you are and trying to get information out of them. That's not something that happens in 15 seconds. That's something that happens in 15, 20 minutes, an hour or more. So people are, you know, you've got to go out in the street and you've got to hang out and listen. The same thing with like a heal check. First aid takes time. You don't just sit down and put a Band-Aid over someone's knee and you're like, okay, heal check done. It's, you know, it's setting a broken bone or it's wrapping a wound and cleaning it. All these skills that we use for all these things in the game take time. We just never pay attention to how much time they take because there's no allotted time limit set next to them. And the only reason why we see that on rituals is because it's actually set in the description next to it. Oh, this takes 15 minutes. Oh, crap, 15 minutes. I'm never going to use that because I don't have 15 minutes to spare. We're always go, go, go. But if you've got 10 or 15 minutes to stop and clean somebody's wound, you've got 15 minutes to stop and cast a ritual. I mean, that's kind of the way I look at it.
I think that I think you're right. I think the two barriers are cost and time. So what I try to do is just what someone mentioned earlier, and that is, you know, give casting components as part of the treasure parcel. And I do my treasure parcels a little bit differently than the sort of standard how it's sort of laid out. But I think the time thing, I think that argument's a red herring. I think the problem is that people want to do the things that you do with rituals in different ways because they think it's easier. I think, you know, the what was it you mentioned earlier, the question one where you get to ask three questions.
Like, yeah, Hand of Fate.
You're right. Yeah, the Hand of Fate. Like, you know, they would rather run around the streets for 2 hours and talk to people than just have the DM tell you, well, the rumors around the streets are, than to actually have to compose, you know, role play out, you know, casting this ritual and generating this sort of arcane knowledge in front of you and then having to pose a question to it and describing how. And, you know, I've actually had players use this in games, and it's really – the answer they get really depends on how literal the DM wants to be with how you pose the question. And it's more of like an oracle thing where – the way they pose the question can determine in part the answer. So it's not as straightforward as streetwise. So they'd just rather go do streetwise. And so I don't think it's just cost and time. I think the time is just sort of an excuse for saying something else. And that something else is they don't find it fun to have to describe that, or they don't find the opportunity. So they don't want to waste the time on it because they consider it a waste because they're not sure what the outcome is going to be. Whereas with a streetwise, they're pretty sure if they succeed on the streetwise check, they're going to get good information.
Well, and those are all good points so far. I think I'm kind of in the middle there. I don't want to necessarily hand wave a ritual. I don't design specifically towards them, though. And to Tracy's comment, I don't. If the players are going to use a ritual, they're going to use a ritual. What I have to be aware of at DM is that the rituals are out there, and if the player acquires them, I need to make sure, particularly at high levels, that it doesn't break my game. And I have that just has to be a pre-existing condition. They're, you know, I'm not going to. They would never ask me permission for one thing. Will this break your game?
Like, yeah, that's. I don't know who. I don't know who Tracy's playing with, but I want them at my table. I mean, jeez.
Yeah. But as far as the time issue goes, I mean, I like Thaddeus's idea, and I think that the idea of using foci and to be able to cast the thing ahead of time and then lock it into a device or an object that's usable like once, and that finishes the completion of the ritual, and that to me is the standard action that you take. I still like the idea of using the time, but hey, that's what extended rests are for. So, you know, part of that, you're using up 6 hours is all you need to sleep. What's most people down for? You know, 8 hours, 10 sometimes a night. I mean, my players are pretty thorough, so they want time to get, you know, to do their drinking and eating and bathing. For some reason, my characters are always interested in going for a bath after.
Wow,
they're hard to even venture. Yeah, they seriously. It's like, does this place have a bath? You know,
I don't think I've ever had a player want their character to take a bath. That just makes me think that they're just all stinky all the time.
Well, in their defense, it's my wife's character that does that a lot, so...
Yeah, I think I do that. I want baths.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't want to seem sexist. This may be a woman thing. I don't know. But,
sexist.
So I know. I'm old, so yeah, give me that. But, no, I think that... they want time to do those things, and so if you tell them, look, you want to cast this ritual, that's great, but part of your adventuring day is going to be taking up with that first, and then you can focus that and carry it around or whatever, cast it as you will. Now, the other thing is that there's a couple of my players that have forsaken ritual casting and go with alchemy instead, and because those are things that can be used directly in combat. A lot of the cases, they're damage effects, they're combat effects, and that sort of bridges the gap between stuff you can use in combat and ritual type things that you know.
And alchemy, honestly, is where I got the idea for the focus stuff that I
right,
write about.
Exactly. So, you know, I think that makes good sense, but there were spells like this in the original versions, you know, they were expensive. I laugh when the people mention, oh, the cost is terrible. Too bad. Pay the cost. You're filthy rich.
Yeah.
I mean, you kill dragons, you get, I mean, I've seen the treasure tables. You get thousands and thousands.
I don't want to spend any of my gold.
And it's like, you know what? Buy the frickin' ritual, you know? And so I don't complain about the price. And so, cause it gives them something to spend the money on. And some of those spells in the original editions were just as expensive. I mean, look at the wish spell. I mean, granted, that's no longer in the game, but that spell cost you part of your life, you know? And like 10,000 gold piece diamond or something like that. It was like some ungodly thing. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were several spells that were along those lines. And so, you know, don't give me the, oh, it's too expensive, because, you know, that's always been there. So, I don't know. So... That's
well,
all
to,
I have to say
to...
about rich. No, go ahead, Eric.
Why, thank you, Randall.
yeah.
Going back to the topic of time for a moment, I think part of the problem is that when people are doing rituals, they're saying, okay, I want to do a ritual. And there's nothing more to it than that. They're not. I think using them can be more entertaining and more interesting.
True.
And people won't mind the 10 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever. If you get people to role play it a little more, I know this came up on Twitter a little bit, but I think that if you have the person who's casting the ritual, if you have them describe, okay, you're casting this ritual, what does it involve? If it's a religious based religion, based on the religion skill, I mean, are you going to call your God? I mean, make up a quick prayer that you can say, make it something interesting. If it's arcane, draw a little diagram, or if it's nature, depending on what the ritual might be, have your character negotiate with primal spirits. Do something. Make it more interesting. I think if more people tried to make rituals more of an interactive experience, something more than just saying, okay, I cast it, I think they would mind that time sync quite so much.
Yeah, and I often...
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I often basically, when my players want to cast a ritual, I just point at them and say, okay, you know, you tell me exactly what happens, and then I'll tell you what information you get or what effect you get. And my players are usually pretty creative about, you know, drawing circles on the ground and the chants they do and that kind of stuff. And it is really entertaining. And they enjoy it, too, because it gives them complete control over the scene for a short time.
Yeah, I just wanted to add something to that as well, and I completely agree with that. I think that's part of the, like I said, I think that's part of the reason why players don't find it as interesting, because, you know, unless as a DM I say to my players, okay, describe to me what you do. You know, how are you wrapping the healing salve around this person's eyes to, you know, relieve their blindness or whatever? You know, what are you chanting? What are you using? You know, does it have to be at a certain light? Does it have to be dusk or does it have to be dawn? Or, you know, and just make that up and make them actually describe it. And it increases the enjoyment for the players. Even if they get sort of stuck at first, you know, they can sort of talk through it and it works, at least for my players. But and then there was the thing about the focus. I used Thaddeus's same sort of rules, tweaked a little bit to work better with my group. But basically, I let them pick in the morning, and they can imbue any number of foci with, you know, different rituals, and then release that energy later with just a tad bit more effort, and they really actually like that. But it's because you don't generally use rituals in combat, it's not used as much as maybe it sort of implies by actually having that ability. But the third thing I wanted to say was price. Like, I'm a low treasure DM. I don't give huge treasure parcels because the world that I have my players adventuring in is really a poor sort of really Stone Age type world where there's not a lot of people that can, you know, there's not a blacksmith in every town and there's not abundant iron for them to make swords and shields and armor, and there's not a lot of coinage floating around. There's a lot of bartering and there's a lot of different things. So, you know, they don't just find a pot of gold at the end of every sort of little delve. So to me, cost, or to my players at least, cost is an issue. It's not like they get a giant, you know, I know the treasure tables say that at certain levels you're supposed to get, like, you know, huge amounts, but that's not necessarily the way that it works in every group, because it doesn't work that way in mine.
But that just makes the rituals all that more valuable and the magic seem all that more.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. And so they are much more valuable because it's a way to get a task done without having to directly spend gold. Because as I said, I also put, you know, components and whatnot in treasures rather in the treasure parcel rather than just pure money. But anyway, so I think that's
yeah.
I'm being called Scrooge McDuck on the chat, just so everyone knows.
Yeah, I think Randall should have just called him out loud on that.
Yeah.
Well, then,
hey, I was trying to be polite. I was waiting my turn. You know,
Penny Pincher.
Scrooge McDuck, Monty
too.
Burns. I mean, I'm no Monty Hall, but you know, I give the applicable amount. I guess is what it said. Go ahead, Tracy. So,
I was going to say, I'm Scrooge, too. One of the things that I was going to say about lack of detail, I think one of the reasons rituals don't get used as often, at least the reason I don't use them as often, is because there is that lack of detail. And I would love a list of different herbs that might be found, where they might be found, how you can, you know, are they found in the cave, are they found in the forest? So I don't have to come up with it. And then I can more easily include it in the treasure bundles, saying, like, you have this type of herb that's useful for healing spells and things like that. A lot more fluff would be really nice.
Okay.
And I think I've heard that there actually I mean, not necessarily on this topic, but in general, are going to be doing the DDI articles are going to be a little more fluff than crunch in the next year or so.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to that because I agree with
you. That'd be nice. Okay, Alchemy has that, but rituals definitely need it.
Yeah.
Right. And then the other thing is that I am a Scrooge when it comes out to giving treasure parcels. I don't like giving out tons of magic items. I like them having them, but I just, it's not like, oh, well, you just killed a guy in his apartment and it's in the tenements, but he still has all these, you know, gold, magic items. It just doesn't make sense. And one of the interesting things that I thought I heard from Gen Con is that they're going to be changing magic items. And it's not going to be that you necessarily roll into a town and anything that's in the Adventurer's Vault or a DDI article or any of the other books is going to automatically be found there. They're going to, my understanding is it's going to be cut back a fair bit according to what the DM wants to do.
So I have a question about that. Is this rumor that you've heard, or is this something from an industry insider, you know?
No, this is official announcement that they made in the product seminar.
Okay, so then my next question is, I don't understand how, I guess it's not a question, it's more of a statement, but I'll try to form it in the phrase of a question. I don't understand how wizards can basically dictate how a DM hands out magic items in their game. Because, I mean, if the DM wants everything in the Adventurer's Vault to be in the city when the players roll in, it should be there.
Tracy, you want to take that one?
Yeah, they're not dictating to the DM that it has to be away. What they're saying is that the players should not expect that they roll into town and be able to buy whatever they want.
Right, and I thought,
basically what they're doing is they're putting a rating on every magic item. It's either going to be common, uncommon, or rare. And basically all they're doing is saying they're doing that because they want to help the DMs who maybe don't just look at a spread of magic items, and maybe a newer DM can't pick out, oh, that one's really powerful, it should be rare, right? So what they're doing is going through and they're taking magic items and putting them in one of those three categories to help the DM determine, you know, well, if all of your players want this extra super special level 11 shield of whatever that has this really awesome daily power and increases your defenses by 5, you know, is that really good? And should I let all my players have that? Is this the town where the blacksmith lives that makes that one item? You know, just having all the players know that, oh, this item exists in the world and I'm going to ask for that one, so, you know, I'm going to get it. But so basically they're not really changing the way that anything works other than just saying, look, this thing is relatively common, it's because it's easy to make and it's not as powerful. This is uncommon and maybe you don't want to give everybody one of these. And this is really rare because it's a very, very important sort of, not very many people could even make this in the world. So there's probably not more than one or two in the world.
It's not a big change to the system. It's just suggestions to DMs on what should be readily available and what shouldn't.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Well, but it's an obvious rating that they're obviously putting magic items in category, and they actually said that most things will become uncommon. So even things in the PHB and in the Venture Vault, most of them are going to be uncommon and rare. There aren't going to be very many that are common. And that, of course, made all the players upset because, you know, it's always a tug of war between the players and the DMs. That's one of the things, one of the big complaints when 4th edition first came out was, why are magic items in the PHB? They should be in the DMG. So, okay, I'm done. So who's next? Sorry. I don't want to hog this.
I'll go next. I think it just gives you it gives you as the DM the framework to be able to decide, okay, is this too powerful? Is this not powerful enough? It also gives you something to use against the players because, you know, players sometimes they're like, okay, why can't I have this? And now you can, you know, and just having an explanation may not be enough for some players. They may really want to know, well, the book has this, why can't I have this? And now you can kind of go, well, this is an uncommon item. You're not going to be able to find it in a town with, you know, 500 people in it. If you really, really want to go get this, you're going to have to go and find some place to get it from. That said, it's not something the DM even has to follow if they don't want to, but it gives them a little more leverage, I guess, in dealing with players that really want to go by the book or rules as written.
Right. Yeah, because the rules as written, if you start beyond first level, you get magic item -1, 0, and 1. But as it is right now, you could have all three of those be what would in the future be considered rare items, and that's perfectly fine within the rules. And unless the DM really takes the time to look at it, they would have no idea. Like, pretty good if they're newer. It's also a throwback, I think, to an older school of D&D, where magic items were pretty rare. Even a +1 sword wasn't necessarily something you would find in any town. At least my understanding of it was that way.
Yeah, see, I'm new to D&D, you know, just in 4th edition, but I thought that was all stuff that was determined by the Dungeon Master.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are a bunch of tables in the back. To add on to Tracy's comment, though, about how it was in the original editions, actually, magic items were pretty... They were almost Monty Halls. If you look through, like, the Hill Giant... I mean, Against the Giants, or if you look at even the Village of Hamlet, you end up at the end with something like 4 +1 weapons, you know, there's a +2 weapon in there, there's a couple of miscellaneous magic items. I mean, they give away a lot. Now, I actually like the way the treasure tables are structured now. I don't have a problem with those. To me, I choose from those tables, and I choose the items that they find. I don't allow my players to have wish lists. If they specifically want to go on a quest to try to create the elements to find a magic item, then that's a different story, and we'll talk about that. But most of my players will accept what I give them. And I try to balance that based on the level of the campaign, etc. Now, the only danger I have, or I fear, with this common, uncommon, rare stuff is that you end up with people who want to power game it out. And it's like, gee, all I've got's common items. Where do we go to find an uncommon item? You know, they start to MMO it a little bit, and it's like, you know, I need to deck out my character in all rares.
So item availability starts to drive the adventure more than the plot actually does.
I could see it doing that. Now, a good DM will easily prevent that by simply saying, that's not relevant, guys. I mean, there's no, you know, you find a rare item, you find a rare item, but not everyone will have one. And it's quite possible that the one guy with the two rare items, another guy next to him, has 6 commons. So, you know, it's all going to balance out.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
What is Monty Hall?
Oh, Monty Hall. Oh.
Well, I
remember the game show. Do you remember
Thaddeus,
the game
Thaddeus
show?
Thaddeus is a young man, Randall.
Randall, I mean, I'm a young man of only 30, so I don't know Monty Hall.
Monty Hall was a game show host for a game show called what was the name of the show?
See, that's
anyway. They gave away
nobody knows.
They gave away prizes, and they gave away a lot of prizes. For I mean, you stand up and you're in a costume, you get a prize. I mean,
let's make a deal.
Thank you, Tracy.
Yeah.
Yes, let's make
yeah,
a deal. And just about every kind of outcome, you would get some kind of prize. And so the whole idea of the Monty Hall campaign is that it gave away the farm. I mean. You just get loads and loads of crap and stuff, you know, whatever.
Donkeys.
And
you can say crap. Crap's fine.
That's right.
It's not explicit. I think the only time I've ever heard,
yes,
besides you say it, the term Monty Hall was on the commentary for Bender's Game on Futurama. So,
Monty Hall campaign gives away way too much stuff.
Okay.
And I did want to backtrack just a second and mention about monetary treasure. Tracy jumped into the magic item thing, and when I was talking about value of treasure, I'm talking specifically monetary treasure at this point, not magic items. I have a whole different tier of how I give those out as opposed to how much monetary treasure I can. In fact, too much monetary treasure is often humorous because I'm always asking my players, okay, how are you carrying it all? This approximately weighs, I don't know, 500 pounds. Are you sledding it out? Are you have a team of dogs? What are you doing here with this? And so... In fact, I had a campaign where they actually had to buy a wagon and carry all of the gold in it. I mean, just to carry these treasure chests around with them, because they had no way to put it until they could get to a big city and I would allow them to bank it.
See, that sounds like a great idea. Give your player like 5,000 gold in silver pieces.
Oh, yeah, they hate that. Oh, it drives them nuts.
Oh, or copper, that's even better.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. That's if you're feeling cruel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome. One giant stone statue worth 500 gold, but it also weighs 500 pounds. Go. What are you going to do?
That's actually really that's really entertaining to do because that breaks up – I'm sorry to jump out of turn here.
Wow.
But that breaks up the – okay, instead of, all right, piles and piles of coins – you have something interesting that they can take and sell or keep, depending on what
part of
it
the
may
story.
Be. Yeah, I mean, it may be a piece of art, a statue, something else entirely, and that's far more entertaining than just coins.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So in my in my current group before I joined, one of the ones they did was a decorative butter churn. It was in the middle of a dungeon for some godforsaken reason. It's like almost
that's
solid
awesome.
Gold or something. And so this guy's walking around with this big churn just, you know, strapped to his back. He's off balance and everything because it's worth a lot of money and they got to get it out of there.
Wow.
See, now here's the kind of DM I am. A solid gold butter churn would eventually poison all the people that used it because the fats and the butter would leach off the gold metal and everyone would have heavy metal poisoning. So
awesome.
Science.
I think that's bringing a little too much reality into the game for me.
Well, it depends on if you want your character to die, if you want your PCs to die slowly without ever figuring out what it is that's killing them.
Well, did you?
So I'm Scrooge McDuck DM, but Randall apparently, Randall apparently is,
inhabitants are dead.
Is, you know, butter churn poisoner DM or something.
I can't imagine not. Well, I'm a Scrooge too. I mean, as much as I make fun
no,
of you
but
guys,
I'm a puzzler guy, and I like to drop in puzzles, and that's one of the things they would find. You know, a whole open inhabitants dead is a solid gold butter churn. Why did it kill him?
I think there's a bit of a lag.
That's all right. People just listen on through.
Yeah.
So, I actually wanted to bring up another topic. I think we've all hit the last two topics pretty well, and that is something that that SarahDarkMagic.com had, and that is a blog about alignment versus personality versus like aspects, and I wanted to get everybody's sort of opinion on that. So Tracy wrote a really good post about alignment in fourth edition and how, you know, alignment, it's kind of nice that alignment isn't a featured feature at this point, because personality goes a long way, goes a lot farther distance than something like alignment does, because good versus evil is not always black and white, straightforward. So having someone with a personality trait is sort of better to have than just a one word alignment. And I asked or left a comment on there, and I basically said, you know, that's true, and it one of the so the topic the reason I'm bringing up the topic here is because, you know, Dresden Files RPG has a thing called aspects, and aspects are similar to personality traits in a way, but it's sort of a way to meld those two kind of concepts and make alignment something that you want. So I don't know, Tracy, did you want to make a comment? I probably didn't represent your post that you wrote very well. So
hold on for just a second. We just want to say hi to newbie DM who just jumped in the conversation.
Oh no, you did a great job. Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Well, he didn't answer his phone yet.
Oh, really? Nah.
Yeah, I haven't picked up yet.
He didn't answer the phone.
Well, then,
all we want, but then,
yeah,
then proceed. Proceed.
It's ringing.
Oh, he said, hold on.
Tracy,
he's having
mic
problems, I guess.
Yeah. Tracy, did you want to outline what your sort of thoughts on alignment were?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of it came out of the last time I was on during right before Gen Con, when we were talking about you know, we only allowing players to play good characters because we wanted a certain for them to act a certain way. And I guess in my mind, the big problem was that I know of many examples of groups that, you know, maybe even society as a large thought was good at the time, that have done some things that I consider much more evil. So that's why I don't like the terms, you know, good versus evil in an alignment system. And I'd much rather ask people to play their character, outline what that character, like pick two, three, maybe, I think more than five might be a bit much for most players, things about their personality and about their character that are very specific that they can play, and then reward them for it. And I know that a lot of DMs have talked about doing this, and when I played Dresden Files at Gen Con, one of the things I did like were the aspect system sets up a way to reward players for doing that in a way that's not really covered by D&D. And would help particularly newer DMs figure out how to work that into a game. Where if you just tell them right now, oh, reward your players for playing their character, well, what does that mean? What rewards do you give them? How is too much? What's too little of a reward? Things like that, where the fate system and the aspects, I think, really help with that.
Well, I understand the aspects, but I think the idea of having a, and I know everybody just harps on the fact that having an alignment is basically arbitrary because it means you can't move outside of your alignment. But, you know, I don't agree with that. I think people can move in and out of their alignment a lot given circumstances and situations. It just means that the player has to explain why they're doing something different than what their alignment says. But, you know, you say, You want your players to do between one and five aspects, but five is a lot of aspects. Aspects are very general, and they give you a lot of room to manipulate and move. And so someone could have an aspect that basically paints them to be a good guy, but easily explain every time why it was okay that he burned this village down, why he burned the orphanage down just because it was in his way. Well, you know, this aspect says I'm good, but, you know, it doesn't say anything about orphanages, or it has nothing to do with, you know, this specific situation. So I enjoy having some kind of an overarching, I think you should have a foundation and then build up from there. You should have a general foundation. Is your player, you know, does he care about people at all? No, he's evil. Okay. Or does he care more about himself than other people? Okay. He's unaligned because he still cares about people, but he's more into himself. Or does he care about people more than he cares about himself? Okay. Then he's good.
My understanding from the game and from the parts I read about the fate system were that aspects were not supposed to be that general. They were supposed to be much like smaller than whether or not you're good.
Right.
So I was going to give an example of an aspect for everybody for the listeners' benefits, if you want me to do that.
Yeah, throw one out.
Okay, so someone was asking me online, one of my contributors to my website, and so I sort of explained it like this. I said an aspect is something that it's not necessarily good or bad, actually, but it's a very specific trait that points to a particular talent. So, for example, if I have the aspect I can't drive 55, that means that I tend to drive very fast and I do it very well, so I'm less likely to get in an accident. And if I'm in a high speed chase, I might use that aspect to my benefit and sort of use the leverage of having that aspect as, well, I can weave in and out of traffic and not get an accident, and I won't clip any other cars, and I won't hit a telephone pole, and everybody in the car will survive. But at the same time, the dungeon master, or the game master in this case, could also use that aspect in a different situation where it's not beneficial. For example, if me and the rest of the party are trying to leave the scene of some incident without being noticed, and I'm driving out of the parking lot, the game master might say, well, you have this aspect, I can't drive 55, so you actually burn rubber going out of that parking lot, and that makes one of the cops that's sitting across the street in his patrol car notice you, and he gives chase. And so, you know, there's two situations where that aspect speaks to a very specific, in this case, a skill, but you can also have aspects that deal with personality. And it can be a good or a bad thing, and it's depending on the situation, which I think I think that's why it matches what Tracy was saying earlier, because alignment tends to be, oh, if you're good aligned, you're just good in general. Whereas the aspect is, here's this thing, it's a trait that has to do with you, and it's not good or bad, unless you actually point out a specific situation.
Okay, well, let's...
There's your example.
Okay, Mr. Laggy Pants, let's stop. Okay, we're back in action. So we were...
Sweet.
Had to pause.
Still trying to answer.
So he's still trying to answer. Jeez.
All good.
He just got on right as we were... Hello?
Hello?
I hear him breathing.
Ugh. Sorry.
What's up?
How's
it going? It might help if I didn't mute my mic and then try and figure out why nobody was answering me.
Yeah, that might be kind of good.
Rule number 6 of using your microphone there. So we were talking about alignment and using aspects and whatnot. Is that where we left off?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. At what point did you get cut off? Did you hear my entire example, or did you get?
Yeah, I heard your example. You were Mr. Laggy Pants for a long portion of it, but.
Oh, was I?
Yeah. Yeah, you were.
He's not laggy. He's just been drinking.
No, that you've got us mixed up.
Yeah.
Me.
With Tracy.
That's Dan. Let's make that perfectly clear. Yes. Yeah.
So is
how's it going, newbie?
Is he here?
He. Ooh. You.
You.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm here.
How's it going?
It's going good. How are you guys?
Not bad.
Pretty good.
Now, not to bring the two podcasts in together, but we just recorded a 4 Geeks about Tracy's Gen Con experience. And I know you were also at Gen Con and wanted to know if you wanted to give us a couple minutes of your thoughts, impressions, and maybe a story or two about Gen Con.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. I'm gonna just start rambling, or are you gonna?
Yeah, man, that's what we do.
Ramble away, my friend. Ramble away.
That's what we do here. We ramble.
All right. So, my Gen Con experience. I don't know if you're aware, but I wasn't gonna go to Gen Con this year. I went last year with a few friends, and this year I took my family on a vacation to Europe. So I was a little broke after I came back, but I was nominated for a pair of Annies, and my wife told me you should go. You should be there in case you win. So I decided last minute to go. I rounded up some freaking flyer miles I had, flew out to Indy, stayed in someone's hotel room. I was able to find someone to let me sleep on a couch, and I went. And I came back it was a little weird for me, the trip. And I blogged about it a bit. I went there under the guise of my blog being nominated for an Emmy, and I went there with some pressure that I felt I had to generate content for the blog. And it got to a point where I didn't really enjoy what I was doing out there. And I just kind of wanted to hang out and play some games and drink some beer and be with the people and have fun. And not really be there working, which I felt I was at some point. So it was a little weird. I was there by myself. I was hanging out with people. I wasn't alone all the time. I had friends there. But it wasn't like last year that I came with, you know, 6 guys from Miami came with me. So it was a bit of a different experience. I came back not knowing if I'm going to go next year. Not because I didn't enjoy myself, but because I've learned that I am not a gamer in the sense that I'm not really into other types of games that aren't role-playing games. And there's there's so many different games at Gen Con. For you guys that haven't gone, I mean, you really need to go and experience this. I mean, this is, it's really like a gamer's heaven.
It's a hell of a thing.
To go out there. It's incredible. It's an incredible thing, but my taste in games isn't really isn't really, I'm not really into card games. I'm not really into board games. You know, I like role-playing games. I like D&D. I like some other types of sci-fi games, that type of stuff. But I don't think I got as much out of Gen Con as I could have gotten. I think also part of it was my rush. You know, it was a rush job. I didn't register for any events. It was literally, you know, a few days before Gen Con, I got my ticket and I said, well, I'm going, screw it. You know, I should be there. And maybe that's why my experience wasn't that great. I was tired from my trip because I had been to Europe with the family, and I came back tired because I were there for a while. And
oh, and you were on We Screw Up Everything Airlines too, weren't you?
Yeah.
I had a bad experience. I had a bad experience flying out there.
Sounds like it started out wrong.
It started out on the wrong foot, and I'm not saying I didn't have fun. I did enjoy myself, and I loved playing. And the games that I did play, I loved it. I played in a Dark Sun game, which I thought was fantastic. Chris Sims is a fantastic DM. I mean, the guy is smooth and calm and collected, and he did a great job running that guy. And I ran a game, too, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. I thought everybody had a good time at the table. And Tracy's game at Hooters was a lot of fun, too. So, I mean, I did have a good time playing games. It's not like I didn't have a good time at Gen Con. I just thought that maybe the fact that I was out there by myself, the fact that I was tired from my vacation, and really the fact that that at some point I felt like I was out there working, doing stuff for the blog that I really didn't think I should be doing or felt like doing at some point. I got tired of trying to break news and trying to be the guy in the scene. And you know what? I don't have to do that. I'm not getting paid for this. I don't know if there was any expectation of it for that type of stuff to come out of my blog, but if it was, I'm sorry if I let you down, but it is what it is. I got tired of having to fill that role, which I don't think I need to do.
Did you have readers giving you pressure about that, though? Was it self-imposed?
I think it was self-imposed. I think I promised I wouldn't.
Right.
And then, I don't know if you know my background, but I'm a TV producer and I'm a journalist. I do journalism work. And I guess it's kind of in my nature to produce, to constantly produce. That's why I produce a podcast. That's why I produce a website. It's what I do.
Right.
And I guess I was out there and I didn't turn off that switch until I realized what I was doing. And then I said, well, you know what? Let me slow this down. I'm not here for anybody. No one's paying me to be here.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That kind of put me in a weird mood, realizing that I was putting this pressure on myself to have, you know, to make my blog stand out when, you know, I don't have to do that. I don't want to. If no one's going to read it, then no one's going to read it. I really don't care at this point.
Writing exercise. You have to do it for yourself.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Audience,
I felt like
you can write for yourself. You're not.
It got to a point where I felt that I was trying to please whatever audience I thought was out there waiting for me to put this stuff out there, and I don't think that was the case. I don't think anybody was really expecting me to do that, because I'm not really a news blog. That's not what I do. So
right.
I had to check myself a bit at Gen Con, and I did, and I did enjoy myself. It's not like I didn't enjoy myself. It's just like a weird – I realized a few things out there about what I want the blog to be, about what I want to be as a member of this community, and – about me as a gamer.
And I think the experience you had is something that a lot of bloggers come to eventually, and that's the experience of, you know, do I blog about this because I'm doing it? You know, you're playing D&D, so you blog about it. Or are you doing it because you want to blog about it? You know, did you make that trip just because you wanted to have content for your website? Or do you play D&D because you want to have a successful blog about it? And it sounds like, you know, you've decided you play D&D, and so you want to game. You want to write about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I started my blog. I was playing in a game, and I felt like writing about it. And at some point along the way, I sort of lost my way with the blog, and I started diverting into other things that I don't think I'm going to go back to as a man.
You know, a newbie, I mean, I can only speak for myself, of course, but I read your blog and I had no expectation, and probably the majority of your readers didn't have expectation, but I also do that to myself, what you described of putting certain expectations on myself for certain things, and it is a tough realization, but you know, one of the reasons why I took contributors onto my site was that I started, there was a lot of pressure that I put on myself to put up blog posts, and I was trying to do all these different things, and I had all these wonderful ideas, but I couldn't, it was like I could start them all, but I couldn't finish them all because I would get too busy or too caught up, and then I would feel really bad about not finishing one or not doing this or not doing that, and I took contributors because I write much better blog posts now because I don't have the pressure of I got to write something every 2 days that's really earth-shattering. You know, I can write something once a week or once every 2 weeks that's pretty good and be happy with it. But it was a hard little transition to get from point A to point B there. So I, you know, it didn't take it wasn't a Gen Con-esque revelation for me, but it was the same sort of thing. So, you know, whatever makes you happy, man, that's what you have to go for. So,
yeah,
you know,
that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, and if I can just say, because I went there and I love meeting you, Zuffy. It was great. We had a lot of fun in Chris's game.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun.
if you're not on somebody's dime, it's got to be, if you're going to go to Gen Con, it's got to be about what you want to do and keeping your schedule open. And you know what? I had a schedule set up of, like, I'm going to go to these seminars, but when it came down to it, if that's not what I felt like doing, I said, sorry, but no, I'm going to go hang out on the exhibit room floor, or I'm going to go play in Chris's Dark Sun game, even though Fred really wants to go out on the floor with me. But if you try to put that pressure on yourself, it's so hard. I mean, I felt really bad. I knew there were people tweeting me, asking me to give them information from the red box or stuff like that. And, you know, there are constraints I have to work in, not only just with my time and how much energy I have, but to try to, as someone who's not a professional, like you said, you know, to try to put that much pressure on yourself, I can see that just totally making it not a fun trip at first.
Yeah, it was a very odd feeling.
I think when I went back in 2004, I mean, I actually went to Gen Con and didn't play a single game. I was there to learn about writing, and so I went to a lot of writing seminars, and I was on the show floor a lot, you know, and I watched several things, but I did not, I actually didn't play a single game when I was at Gen Con, and I was okay with that, because I'd set up my schedule, and Tracy is so right, and I think if you're going to, you know, tweet updates and things like that, you have to make it a part of your schedule. Don't feel pressure for it, but set it up ahead of time and say, you know, like maybe every evening right after dinner or something, I'll tweet what I did that day, or if I'm going to post pics, I'm going to do it then, or right before I go to bed that night, or whatever, and not try to feel, you know, instant pressure. I'm thinking about going next year, and I'm pretty sure that I'll be tweet dark for most of the time, because it's like, who's got, you know, I'm paying attention to what's going on right then and there. I don't really care about broadcasting it to the world until I'm ready to, you know, so.
Yeah, I was at the Wizards of the Coast new product seminar, and
yep.
They sat me up in the front and front row, the press. It was like a press seat, right? They had like a press setup. The front row was on press. So I was sitting there and I started tweeting like a madman on the announcements. And
yeah, I followed this.
I don't know if you saw the stream, but I was taking pictures and tweeting and this and that. And at the end of that, I was thinking, one, my hands were hurting because I was on a BlackBerry.
Bad for your health.
My thumbs were crooked and numb like question marks, and I'm thinking, what am I doing? Like, who am I doing this for? When there's a guy sitting next to me doing the same thing, and he's probably doing it better. Why am I even bothering? Why am I sitting here? I should just go and play a game. And I didn't do that. I stayed because I happened to find it interesting, but it was the point behind it. I think a lot of people, I was reading on Twitter a few days ago, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, or I don't remember who it was. Somebody wanted to take their blog and make it a top RPG blog, and they wanted to they wanted their blog to be one of the top RPG blogs. And how do we do that? And I'm thinking, you know,
you go right for critical hits.
Yeah, really. What's a top RPG blog? What does that mean? You know, I don't know.
Was this the A list versus B list versus C list conversation that you're talking about?
Yeah, I stayed
away from that conversation.
And I'm thinking, one, I don't know if anyone's judging blogs by, you know, best or worst. Or,
the Ennies are, but...
Well, maybe the Ennies are, but even the Ennies to an extent, I think... I mean,
I'm on
my
list for that, so, you know.
Well, the thing is, like, how many of us are making... I don't make any money off my blog, and I don't have eyes towards that. To me, saying something is A-list versus B-list versus D-list or whatever that terminology is doesn't really make any sense, because I only need to be A-list, number one, AAA blog, D&D blog, if I plan to make money on it, or if I want to make money on it, or if I need to do that, and none of those things apply to me. So that's why I stayed away from the conversation, not because I thought it was a dumb conversation or anything, because I just sort of didn't pay much attention to it, because it's meaningless to me to say.
Yeah, no, I'm not discrediting the conversation. I mean, there's people that, for maybe some people who want to make their blogs a business, and that's perfectly legitimate and it's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that. That's not my goal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, I also stayed a bit away from the conversation because what am I going to add to it? One, I don't have a gauge as to who is, you know, top bloggers. And I can tell you the top bloggers are the ones that won the NEs, and they're the ones that have tons of ads on their sites.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so right off the bat, that disqualifies me as having a top blog. So I'm not going to give an opinion about it. You know, but I see people talking like that, and I'm thinking, what is it that you're trying to get out of blogging? What is it that you're trying to get notoriety? Are you trying to get money?
Yeah, it's
are
usually
you trying to find them.
Well, it just seems like it's one of two things. It's either you want to be really popular with people you've never met before and you'll never meet, or you want to get money out of it, or free stuff. And it seems kind of false to me. It seems like the best blogs are the ones written by people who are just doing it because they love it, and they're really excited about writing about it. And when you end up with something like what DungeonMastering.com has become, when it's just like, I'm not really into it, but I want to make money off of it, so let's see what we can do. And then suddenly, you know, you have the big auction fiasco and money changing hands, and it just turns into it's kind of crap. As far as I'm concerned, trying to make money off your D&D blog is crap. You say there's nothing wrong with it. I say if you're making money off of it because you love it and it just happens to happen, that's fine. But if you just start the website saying, here's a group of people, I want to go make money off of them, I really don't have a lot of passion for this, then that's crap and you're crap, and you can send hate mail to Thad's hate mail at TableForOne.com for all I care. But you're crap.
That's the case.
You're crap if that's what
that
you
seems
want.
To be the case with. That seems to be the case with Dungeon Master. I don't know the owner. I don't know. Based on what I read on that auction site, that seemed to have been the case. The guy wasn't really into D&D, but he bought the site. He was making money off it. He hired some guy to write articles for $5 an article, mm-hmm. and off he went. And, you know,
right.
he made a lot of money off the site. I mean, he sold it for $5,000. A lot of money.
And he sold it actually back to the original owner, from what I understand. Which is
I don't know
who bought it.
I don't know.
Yaz's name is on the front page again, so that tells me that it's right back in the hands of the creator, which is just he sold it and then suddenly wanted it back. So I don't know. It's to me that.
But I don't know. I'm gonna disagree with you saying that people who have their blogs and make money off them is crap. I don't know if that's true either. I mean, I know plenty of good bloggers that have ads on their sites.
Well, no, but those are, you know, what I'm saying is that if you're passionate about it and then the money just happens to happen, you know, like, okay, we've got a lot of readers, it's really great, we can monetize this, that's great. That's fine. I mean, that's how organic business starts. You're excited about something, you're passionate about it, and then, you know, it builds from there. But if you just jump on Twitter and you're like, okay, this D&D community seems like it's, you know, they've got money to spend, so I want to start a blog so I can make money off this. Let's do it. And I'm going to pay somebody $5 a post to do it, and I want to spend as little time as I can doing this. What do I need to do to be the top blog because I want money? that's crap. That's just saying, here's a niche market. I want to try to make money off them. I don't know much about the market, so I'm just going to ask them what I need to do. So that,
see, to me, it's a question. It's a question of definition. If you begin to sell a product, you're no longer writing a blog. You're selling a public product, whether that's a publication or an accessory or whatever.
Or a T-shirt.
That's no longer a blog.
Or isn't there a guy here selling hoodies? I mean,
promotional type things are different. Now I'm gonna step back a second, a half a step, and say promotional items are one thing. That's a kind of a different thing. But if you go out, as a, for example, like this Dungeon Mastering site, and claim to have all these great modules, et cetera, you are now a publication site selling a product. And so you need to have the same – that changes the mission right there. It's no longer a blog. A blog is people writing about stuff that interests them as far – it's a weblog. And
well,
so, you know, that's
– here's the thing, Thaddeus. You are actually the perfect example for what we're talking about because you made those shirts because – you wanted to make a cool, geeky shirt, not because you wanted to make money off of a T-shirt company that you're starting.
Okay? Right. At the end of the whole T-shirt.
At the end of the day, if you don't make any money on it, it's not going to kill you because you didn't stake your whole rest of your life on selling all those T-shirts, okay, or hoodies or whatever it is. So, you know, you made cool T-shirts that you like that you think are cool, and you could give them away as prizes or sell them or wear them or do whatever you want, and it's not the focus of your life or your business or your blog. Your blog, I don't remember other than the initial post of, hey, look at my cool shirt. You know, if you think this is cool, you know, let me know. Or if you want a different design, let me know. Other than that, I haven't heard you say anything about, on your blog at least, about the T-shirts.
Yeah, I joke about it more than anything because I think it's fun.
Right, right. But it's not a focus of, hey, here's my blog site where I blog about, you know, all these great T-shirts I'm making. Come buy them so I can make a living.
Yeah.
I'm going to start selling pictures of me in different poses at the beach. They're going to be $9.99. They're going to be available on my blog.
Your clientele is going to change significantly.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a post up about it next week.
Nice. On an off note, I'll buy 10.
Yeah, I'm putting that in my calendar now.
Yeah.
I'm going to blog next week. Okay. I actually worked. So for a while, my job was to create websites where people would put in search terms in Google and find our site and use our affiliate links to buy things and make us lots of money. So I think part of the issue in this conversation is just that we're defining best website or best blog in two different ways. Like, for us, the best blogs are the ones that really write about D&D or role-playing games in general in a way that we just love to read and we love to consume. But those sites, one of the things I've noticed amongst a lot of those sites is they're not very good at search engine optimization or, you know, they're not going to come up on the top of a Google search all the time. Because that's not their game. Whereas there are going to be these other sites out there that are going to find the affiliate programs that are going to push, you know, products you can buy for D&D. And so when some, I call them a sucker, puts in, you know, D&D maps,
right there.
That's what's going to be coming up. And to other people outside, that's what it means to be the best blog. And part of the reason that it can become important, like, you'll want to write good content. Some people will go into this wanting to write good content to get the any nomination or award or just to get lots of links to it, and then they can sell that site to somebody else for, you know, 5, 10, 15K or whatever it is, and those sites will buy it because they're already getting traffic and Google rank, Google juice to it. So that's all I had to say about it. I'm not a huge fan of the blogs that don't care about the products at all. I can't tell you that I've never written a post with the hopes that my affiliate links would earn me at least enough to cover my hosting. But I haven't done that for a long time since at least PAX East, because I just love writing about this other stuff much more, and, you know, it's a sunk cost and it's well worth it to me. So anyways.
Yeah, I just wanted to also make the point that I am not against capitalism, and I think that someone whose goal is to come out and start a good website or a decent website and end up making money through whatever means, whether it's excellent content for whatever niche market they are targeting, or, you know, like Tracy said, through, you know, search engine optimization and having, you know, being in the right place at the right time, so to speak. That's fine. I don't begrudge any of those people that. And that's sort of why I didn't enter that conversation on Twitter, because to me it's just not my thing. But I don't care if someone else wants to do it. But the thing is, that's not going to necessarily make me read their blog or not read their blog. Because I look for, you know, the content versus, you know, the what's this person selling, or, you know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not against capitalism. I'm not saying that it's evil, bad thing for someone to try to make money off of their website. People do that all the time. I mean, that's the basis of a lot of people's jobs and a lot of people's how they make their livings, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. What I think what Thaddeus, though, is saying, to maybe paraphrase or clarify, is if you start out and you don't know anything really about the market that you're trying to get into, and you're trying to take quote unquote the easy way by, you know, purchasing a website that already has a certain number of hits per day or whatever, and you do that for the sole purpose of producing mediocre content just to make money, you know, it's going to end up burning you. It's going to end up not being a very good site, and that's where the example of dungeonmastering.com comes in, is that site went downhill, and, you know, no one that I know of goes to that site and has a great deal of respect for it at this point, because whoever bought it the first time didn't really care about gaming, and that's the main problem. And I think what Thaddeus is saying is, if you want to make money, you better care about gaming and the niche market, because this market is a niche market and it's a very small market, and there aren't a lot of people producing really good content. There are some, and I mean like third-party people, or, you know, I'm not talking about Watsy or Paizo or whatever. I'm just saying, someone who wants to start a website just to sell a product, it better be a good product, and then it'll sell itself. You can't do it just because you bought somebody's site and you want to make money off of it.
Right. And I'm, you know, to make money off your website, and I don't, and I probably never will. I mean, the whole t-shirt fiasco is awesome because, you know, I'm at the end of the day, I've given out more than I've sold, and I'll probably be about $200 in the hole. But the exciting thing is, if I ever show up to a con and someone is wearing a shirt that I made, that will put a smile on my face. And that's awesome, because I'm like, okay, someone likes the shirt I made. Awesome. That's all I want. You know, there are really two people in this conversation could probably right now make money off their websites. And that's Tracy, and that's Newbie DM. And they have built these websites out of basically just hard work and love. You know, Newbie puts out this content that people really, really like. And they download, and, you know, he's given it to them for free, and it's useful, and it's stuff that, you know, people will co-op into their game and will continue to come back to his site for this help. And that's something he's built over time and he's put the work into. And so I wouldn't begrudge anyone who would at that point put links up on, or, you know, some kind of advertising up on their site to subsidize the cost, or, you know, so that their extra time. I know that Newbie DM stays up late at night to write, to do his design and his writing, because it's the only way it fits into his day. And that to me would be respectable. Okay, throw some ads up so that late night that you're putting in every couple of days is worth something, you know. And
also that, because I'm one of the undead.
Right. Also, that's cool. that's also where you get a lot of respect too. But yeah, so no one's begrudging that. It's the people who see the niche market and think, okay, so there's a quick buck to be made here if I just find the right people to write for me, and if I just, you know, put the minimum
opportunists.
Yeah, if I put the minimum effort in, I'm going to get rich off this blog, because look, all these geeks are out there sitting in coffee shops and they write a couple posts and tons of people go to their website. So I'm going to do that too. And so then, I mean, I don't know the conversation that happened on Twitter. I don't know why that guy wanted to be the best at his website. But I know the first thing you need to do is not go out and announce that you want to have the best website. You just need to start.
Well, I think he
just wanted to know what would make a good website, because he wants to make his website valuable to the readers, not for money necessarily. So we sort of took this conversation in a different direction than I think what he meant. I think, because I remember the conversation, and I follow the guy who posted the question.
Okay.
I think he was posing it as, what can I do to make my site better so that lots of people will read it? That's really what he was asking.
Okay.
But it became this whole A-list versus D-list comparison, and it evolved into this really strange conversation.
Did I make it onto the D-list?
No.
I don't know. I quit paying attention to the conversation.
Actually, I think you made it onto the Greek alphabet after the you were like Kappa or
oh
or...
I was shooting for Theta, but you know, whatever. I'll be a beta guy if I can be. Yeah,
which is fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a successful Greek alphabet blog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm half Greek, so I'm right there with my people.
Now, again, I don't think there's anything wrong with aspiring to have a blog that's successful. And when you define success as I have a lot of readers who enjoy what I write, there's really nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm always happy.
I don't want to criticize the guy for that. That's not my intention. That's not what I meant.
I'm always happy when I check my stats and see that I've beat last month, you know, by a good amount. It always makes me smile. Are you guys
slaves to your stats?
No.
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 No. No, it's one of those things that's nice to look at and be like, oh, look at that. I beat last month. All right. And I'll tell my girlfriend and she's like, oh, that's great, honey. And then I go back to doing whatever I was doing.
Well, you know, I got approved to be an Amazon affiliate website, and I haven't set that up yet because I'm sort of like, I'm wondering if I really want to do it. I mean, I would only do it so that it could help me pay my hosting costs, like Tracy said earlier. But I'm afraid that if I do that, my contributors and myself included will try to start writing to point people to buy these products. And I don't want to be like that. That's not what I want for my blog. So I've sort of have hedged on putting the affiliate links up and stuff like that, because I sort of have a vision of what I want the blog to be and what I want my contribution to the blog to be. And it doesn't include trying to make a ton of money off of just reviewing products or having people click a link to get to a product. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's just not – I'm not sure it's what I want, because I want my blog to just be someplace where people go, you know, once a week or whatever to read some good content.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly,
well, I can say you probably won't make a ton off of it.
Well, yeah, no, I know. Well, that's what I mean. Like, I don't even know if it's worth it, because I don't want it to be to not even help with the hosting costs, and then also to sort of change our direction. You know, that's the sort of dilemma.
So my question now becomes, what about like the podcasts that get sponsors? Because I was thinking about maybe trying to steal Obsidian Portal away from Obsidian Portal away from those DM guys, because they don't need it.
Yeah, you might not want to do that. But the first thing you got to do is get a podcast going that's as good as the DM Guys podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, done.
I just saw Tracy indignant.
Yeah, keep pushing. Keep pushing. She's about to roar. I like this. Keep going.
That was a joke, by the way. I'm just kidding. You guys have a fine podcast.
I'm waiting for my invite still, so I'm allowed to be a little bitter.
Ooh, the thing with the sponsors on the podcast, I don't know. I didn't get that. That wasn't part of my contribution to the podcast, so I wouldn't even know how it happened. I can tell you this. My podcast, the one I do by myself, is not sponsored, and I haven't had anyone approach me about sponsoring, even though it's an Emmy nominated podcast.
hit, wink, wink.
I digress. I digress. No one has asked me about sponsor. I wouldn't even know the first thing about finding a sponsor for either a blog or a podcast. So,
newbie, I will say right now on this podcast that if I launch a product, I will sponsor your podcast.
Thank you very much.
Well, wait, don't you have like a sometimes or / part time sponsor with Gator Games?
Not for the podcast, and
just for your giveaways.
Yeah, just for the giveaways.
Okay.
She doesn't have us. They don't have a permanent ad on my blog.
Okay. I mean that's actually how I found your blog. I mean, not to fawn all over you or anything like that, but you know, I found your blog through your giveaway with Gator Games, and your blog is what made me want to write about my home game, which is what got me the whole, that's what got me into the whole blogging, podcasting thing. I mean, I think the first contact I had with you was I was on the D&D community website because I had just gotten into D&D, and, you know, you invited me to the newbie DM thing because I was writing there about my home game, just little tidbits here and there.
Oh, at the DM group?
Right, right. And then, you had that giveaway on your site, and so I was like, ooh, I like free stuff. And then, you know, I found your site and was like, oh, man, you know, this is awesome. I want to have a site like this. And, you know, a week later...
Man, this is the best damn site I've ever read. This is
You know what, Newbie, you laugh and you make fun of it, but you're the first site that I started following when I got back into 4th edition.
Yeah.
I started reading your site, and I'm not quote unquote a newbie DM because I started with OD&D. But when I decided to get back into 4th edition, I was like, okay, can I really do this? And I found your blog, and it made me say, yeah, you know, I can do this. And then I got into Twitter, and you were one of the first people I followed, and you know, the rest is history. Here I am doing two podcasts, and I have contributors for a blog that I started a year and a half ago, and. You know, I feel like, you know, I'm making contributions. I'm not making money, but that's not the point, you know. So, you know, you're responsible for keeping a lot of people sort of in the hobby just because.
Yeah, no pressure.
You know, and it's the same with Tracy, you know, that you know, Sarah Dark Magic I also found shortly after I found Newbie DM. And it's sort of like, oh, wow, you know, here are these two great blogs with really great points of view. You know, like neither one of you guys says, look, here's the way it is, do this, do that, and otherwise you suck. You both say, look, here's how I do it. If it works for you, steal it and use it and have fun. If it doesn't, don't worry about it. You know, and you're both very honest about, you know, oh, this worked, this didn't work. I was nervous here, I wasn't nervous there. And it's very, you know, you're real people. And that's the sort of tone that really speaks to me. So those are the, you know, two of the, you know, the longest standing blogs that I've been reading. So, you know, much props to both of you.
Well, thank you. I've often said that SarahDarkMagic.com, there's two blogs. I don't know if I've ever said this, but there's two blogs. There's Sarah Dark Magic and there's a blog called Geek Ken. A writer called Ken.
Have you checked? Newbie?
Those guys, what's that?
Have you checked Geekend's blog lately?
Yes, I know he left and he's joining you and you're...
Woo-hoo. I'm happy.
I think Geekend is a wonderful blog. And at one point, when I was thinking of bringing in contributors to my blog, he was the first one that I was going to bring on. I always thought that if I ever stop blogging, Geekend and Sarah Dark Magic will be the spiritual successors to my blog. And what I try to do with my blog, which was to let new DMs in on this wonderful game and this art form that is DMing. Those are the two blogs that I thought would fill the niche that I think I sort of filled when I first started my blog. So there you go, Tracy. That's for you.
Well, thank you, Enrique.
I think you made her cry.
Yeah.
I know, I was like, Daddy, shut up, please.
And Geek Ken, even though Geek Ken is not here, I don't know if he listens to this podcast or not, but I thought Geek Ken, when I was looking for contributors, he was really the first and only person I thought about to bring on, because I think he has a wonderful blog. I think he has great ideas, and I think he and I speak more or less on the same wavelength as to what we want to do with our respective sites. But you took him and I didn't, so there you go. Thank you.
Well, I mean, I didn't. Yeah, now you're making me feel like a big ass, because I didn't take him. I threw it out there on Twitter, and he responded, you know, very quickly. I'm almost positive that if you would have thrown the offer out before I did, or maybe even if you threw the offer out now, that you would still probably be able to get him. And
Well, no, because I've changed my mind about bringing on contributors, so I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, he's, you know,
so you can have
him. He's been posting for a while about how he has been slowing down and you know, isn't all about maintaining the website anymore. So
I really like his blog, and I like the fact that he's very, very active in the new DMs group on the Wizards community.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with that group. It's a group I started way back when the community first, when they first changed the website. And he was one of the first guys to hop on there, and he's very active there, and he's one of the good guys, and I really enjoyed what he's done with his site.
Yeah.
What he has to say.
I was insanely excited when he contacted me, so. Yeah, I think it's awesome.
So well, I think it's clear he needs to be on a roundtable soon, then.
Yeah, well, sadly, he is in Korea. He's in South Korea. I've already talked to him about this, and so...
That would be a problem, yes.
Yeah, time difference is a bit off for him.
Yeah, that'd be awkward.
Aaron, how are you doing over there?
I'm just listening.
Yeah, Aaron's like on the couch watching TV now. Well, honestly, I think we are almost at the 2-hour mark now, so I think this is a good place to call it quitsies.
Yeah.
And I know I just said quitsies, that was terrible, but it just slipped out.
No, it's not. I have one more thing I want to say before you
Okay. Go. All right, fire away.
Because now I'm going to pimp something I started, and I want, since I'm recording a podcast here, I'm going to put it out there.
Go for it, man, go.
I am working with Quinn Murphy and Mark Meredith of At Will and Dice Monkey. And we are working on something called 4E Home Encounters. 4EHomeEncounters.com is the website where this project will live. And what we are trying to do is emulate the experience of the D&D encounters for those of us that can't make it to a game store. What we're going to do is we're going to release an encounter a week, every Monday, each encounter being part of a larger story. And the goal is that players play the encounter, then they have all week to discuss it on a message board or a website or whatever, and then come back the next Monday and download another encounter and see where the story's going. It's sort of to, we're trying to replicate the experience that Wizards is giving with their encounters program, where people come in and they play an encounter a week, and it's part of a larger story, and there's different websites talking about the encounters, and players are discussing what they liked about it, what they didn't like about it. And I thought, well, I can't make it to a game store on Wednesday night, so I'm out of that. But why shouldn't I be able to play something that's more or less the same and be able to discuss it with other people that have played it and sort of emulate the same thing, community built, you know?
Yep.
So that's what we're doing. That's what we're trying to do. And right now we don't have anything ready to put up. I put up the website actually yesterday. It's sort of sitting there with an intro as to what the project is about. But we are working on it. We are working behind the scenes on it. And there is something coming. So I just wanted to throw it out there and let people know about it. If it's something that interests you, then check out 4EHomeEncounters.com.
Awesome.
Very cool.
I mean, not to go into a deep conversation about it, but I think that's a great idea. I think it's probably one of the biggest questions that they've been asked, and they've been asked the most, is why can't you do encounters in a location other than a game store? And there's a lot of people wanting that.
Yeah, a lot of people, it's very specific to Wednesdays, and it's very specific to game stores, and I can't make it to a game store, not on a Wednesday, not, you know, or any other night, really. I just can't, because I'm working, or I have to be with my kids, or whatever. But my idea with this is to put the game in control of the players and the DM. You know, if you want to play at home, you play at home. If you want to play online, you can play online. We're going to make the maps available for digital play. And my real goal is to make it available and then open it up for discussion so that people can share as to what they liked about it, speculate about where the story is going, that sort of thing. I want it to be like a community project that gets people involved in talking and playing and that sort of thing. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I'll be watching it.
Yeah, definitely.
Well,
are you all sleeping? What?
No, I mean, it's just
No, I think we're all trying to not interrupt you with, yeah, that's a great idea. We're really excited.
When newbie,
I thought I'd put you guys to sleep.
When newbie DN speaks, people listen, and so we just stopped.
No, because my dog is here snoring, and I thought maybe I could you guys to sleep.
I'm just jealous. That's
yeah, funny. Yeah.
I think it's a great idea. I think it'll get a good audience.
Yep.
Yeah, it sounds like it's got
a lot of... We've gotten some emails about it. There's some interest. So, again, it's something we're just doing for the community. It's not something we're definitely not doing it for money. We probably can't. And we don't have any sponsors or anything like that. So it's just something we're doing for fun. I like creating things. I see myself as an idea guy. I come up with ideas and then I try to get people to make them happen because I'm not that good at it.
Honestly, this seems like something right up Randall's wheelhouse. I know you were doing that conversion of Tomb of Horrors, and you're pretty decent at writing encounters and whatnot. I mean, the whole point of this comment is to segue into the question, are you guys looking for help with that, or is this just something that you're going to do contained within your three-man crew? Or
We are looking for help. We're not at the point yet where we're asking people for help. When we get to that point, then we will. But yes, we're not. The idea is not to do everything on our own. Like we are gonna be looking out for artists. I know I was trying to draw a battle map yesterday, and I have the abilities of a toddler when it comes to drawing. So, but yes, we are gonna be calling out for help and putting out, but you know, seeking help, but not yet.
Cool. Awesome.
I will say this though. I'm gonna spoil it a little bit. I don't want to spoil too much of the story, but this is still being tweaked. But whereas the Wizards Encounters chapters are linear, ours will have branches, and what one group experiences may not be the same as what another group experiences.
Sweet,
nice.
So, at least not. Not entirely, but some parts of it will they'll be branching out and different paths towards the same goal.
So my last question is: does anyone else have anything exciting that they wanted to share with the group before we sign off? Anyone doing anything fun or cool?
I have a new post up on loremaster.org on actually a topic from last week's or 2 weeks ago's. DM Roundtable about how to curb your PC's appetite to kill everything.
Oh,
or
yeah,
interrogate
right.
It for hours.
Nice.
So I have that.
Cool. Anyone else?
You're writing on what? You're writing like on four different websites, right? You got Dark Magic, you got Lore Master, you got the temporary hit points. The only website you're not writing at is mine.
Yeah, she's the busiest girl in show business right now.
I gave hints before, and, you know, I didn't get asked, so... And now you're saying you don't want any contributors, so I'm not feeling the love there.
There's a difference between contributors and guest writers.
Okay. Yeah,
Yes. Oh, then I do have something to pimp. But I don't want to interrupt. I don't want to interrupt Tracy, so Tracy, go ahead and finish what you were saying.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm writing for a few different places, just trying to get different styles out there, and just learning a lot about writing and meeting deadlines and not meeting them and all those things. I meet way more than I miss, but Gen Con kind of threw me.
Mm-hmm.
And your parents coming over through you?
Yeah.
That too.
You guys should have seen how cute Tracy looked in her Dungeon Master bowling shirt. At Gen Con, by the way, I
nice.
Walked up to her. She was DMing a Redbox game, and she was wearing her Dungeon Master bowling shirt, her red and black shirt.
The official.
She looked very cute. Yeah, the official Dungeon Master bowling shirt that they gave all the DMs at Gen Con. She was wearing hers, and she was running her Redbox game, and she looked all professional. I was very proud.
Aww.
Awesome.
You're gonna make her cry again. All right.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Sam.
I know I'm deeply moved.
Yeah, but you're just... You're,
yeah, so...
You're a big toughie, Randall.
Hardly. I was talking to Ben from Ben's RPG Pile the other day, and And he then asked me if he could write a guest post for RPG Musings. So he is in the process of co-writing a guest post with me about cooperative party building. So, because I already wrote sort of a post about it before, and then I actually have released an actual play podcast on RPG MP3 with cooperative party building, episode one. And so we're sort of doing a follow-up to that, and it's going to be really good. So look for that in the next week or so on RPG Musings.
He's a good cat. I like him.
Yeah, he's good.
I've worked with him on some stuff before. He's cool. Yeah. Well, I'm preparing an outline for a conversion, for a product conversion for Thaddeus's website. So, newbie, we're going to get you your science fiction role-playing game, and it's going to be 4E.
Awesome.
So we're going to be converting Star Frontiers to 4E.
Really?
So yes, absolutely.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
See if we can't get
some. So I'm working on the outline now, and yeah. So that's a big project because you got to start from the basics and characters. Yeah. I mean, classes, races, and everything. But I think the races will convert very easily over to 4E stats. They're all really well balanced as it is, and I was looking through some of those books. Yeah, Alpha Dawn, and then going into what's it called? The Zebulon's Guide. So, and even Nighthawks, if we've got, you know, time, inclination, or interest. So, but I was looking through those books, and they were using tactical combat grids, even in those books, with movement squares and everything else. So it's not an old, new concept. I mean, so. But it's a great game, and it's got the right mix of space opera and but without all the complicated math physics that Traveler has, and I played it a lot when I was a kid, and it's a great game. So
awesome.
Didn't that game come out right after Star Wars? Try to capitalize on Star Wars.
Probably.
Maybe after the third movie. It came out in like 83, I think. 82, 83. You know, I could probably look that up. But yeah, it was the early 80s, I think, is when that came out. And they produced like three or four a couple box sets, and then the Zebulon's Guide came out, and then they put a few modules for it. There's a series of modules on Volturnus, and there's a couple of movie tie-ins with the movie 2010 and the re-release of 2001. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but they actually had a tie-in module where you could play those scenarios from those movies in Star Frontiers, which I thought was kind of interesting. The tech was slightly different, but it was the same rule set and everything. It was pretty cool. So, but yeah, going to convert those. Star Frontiers has been a love of mine for a long time. I like Traveler, and I like the
1982.
Traveler. There you go. Yeah.
Ah, that was pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah, the memory hasn't completely failed me yet. up my vitamin E. So you know.
So Aaron,
yeah, I've been looking for a good sci-fi game.
Yeah. So look for those posts on Thaddeus' site. I'm going to write those for him. So.
Cool.
Aaron, anything for you, man?
Not really worth mentioning here, no.
Aaron is really excited about our Dresden Files game that we're playing tomorrow.
I am, actually, cool. Yeah. I can't really pimp that out, but yeah, I'm really excited to play that
sure
one.
You can.
I spent all weekend, reading the rule books and working on my character.
No, you actually can pimp it out because it's going on RPG MP3 as an actual play podcast of Dresden Files game. So
that's true. It's going to go out, you said, probably this week or next
week? Well, so what happens there is they release to their patrons for a week, and then they release the audio to the general community, so that anybody could download it without paying anything and with no lag or anything and no ads. And so the patrons will get it this Friday, because I also had to, like, edit it and put it all together so it's one file and all that stuff. But the patrons will get it this Friday. So next Friday, whatever that day is, the 27th, it'll be available. And I will tweet the heck out of it and so that you can all hear it. And so there you have it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting, especially if you're if you haven't done anything with the Fate system. It's worth listening to this just to get an idea of how it works. It's specifically in how it works in pertaining to Dresden Files, but you can kind of apply it, generally speaking, to a lot of Fate system games.
Sam, you are a podaholic. I just got to get that out there. You are completely addicted to podcasting, though.
Well, you know what? Because I play so many games. I mean, I play, you know, a whole bunch of games, and I learn something every time I play a game. And I have, you know, I also have, you know, so I've got a consistent Skype game that we play about once every 10 days that is going up there as an actual play. And then I did a one shot a couple weeks ago. I just said, hey, who wants to play a game in an hour? And I did like 20 minutes of prep and I ran like a 4-hour delve and I put that up there. And this Dresden Files game is going up there. I mean, I learn something every time I DM a game. So I figure if people enjoy listening to that and they learn things too, awesome. Then I might as well release it, right?
Yeah.
Is that Delve up there?
Yep,
because, cool. You know, I was in it and I kind of want to listen to it.
It's in the page. It's patrons this week. It'll go in Friday.
Okay.
And it'll be I'll tweet that too. So I can't tweet them until they're available to the community, and then I'll post a link to the RPG MP3 website where you go on and can download it. So you can also subscribe via iTunes and then it'll just automatically download when it's there. But they have a lot of stuff on there, so if you don't want to kill your iPod with all their stuff, then I'll just link you to the one file. It was a delve of my own making. I made it up as I went, basically.
So what I'm going to pimp this week is SarahDarkMagic.com, because she has talking to newbie DM about his home encounter program started reminding me about the program that the two of them started a while ago, which is the delve program, where you can submit delves and they're all there for download. And I also thought that that was a really great program, and I think that I think people need to start writing for that more too. How is that going, Tracy? Or have you guys kind of stopped working on that?
I haven't stopped working on it. I just haven't gotten a ton of submissions. I'm not quite sure why. I'm hoping that this home encounters program will make people see that the adventures don't have to just come from wizards.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, maybe we should do a contest on our podcast about writing in the best adventure for your site, and we'll give them something fun.
Sounds great to me.
All right. Well, that's about it. I mean,
yep.
We can keep going, but, you know, people...
Everybody
people,
say goodnight.
People got to stop listening sometime.
Good night again.
Night, everybody.
Night, everybody.
Night, everybody.
Night. Au revoir.